Hello? Okay, it's recording. Okay, so today is 5/5/2022, and Keith, we're going to pick up where we left off. We were talking about the name of the safety officer who was didn't really want Keith working down there, and we're going to just talk about that a little bit. I'm going to let Keith talk. So go ahead, Keith.
Okay, well, this is the kind of discrimination that I had to deal with in the Park Service. Even though the Park Service goes through all of these trainings and stuff about accessibility, they aren't accessible. They aren't very accessible. But it was because of my vision that I got a job with the Park Service originally, working at Walnut Canyon. It just so happened that they had hired somebody to fill an interpreter position at Walnut Canyon, a seasonal interpreter position, and the guy that they hired didn't take the job, and so it was the springtime of 87, I think it would be.
And this was after you had done the whole thing in Iowa?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. It was, no, it was before I did all the stuff in Iowa.
Okay.
But anyway, I was, it was, so anyway, they, the guy didn't take the job, and so they needed somebody immediately, and it just so happens that they could hire me because of my handicap on a special deal anyway, where they could hire me just right off of the of my application instead of making me, you know, comparing me or having me compete against everybody else who had, you know, all the other people who had put out applications.
Okay.
Because see that in order to hire, they would have to compete, you know, look at all their applications and compete and have everybody compete against each other in order to hire, and they needed somebody immediately. So they could hire me, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a special program built to help disabled people get jobs with the Park Service. And so,
would this have been your very first job officially with the Park Service?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so they hired me anyway, seasonally. And I was able, you know, I was able to work seasonally for 3 years.
Okay.
And
like summer times or?
Yeah, summer times.
Okay. Were you still in Phantom in the winter or not?
No. I was living in Flagstaff.
Okay. All right. We did cover some of that when you were doing the movie theater and that kind of thing.
Right.
And Nancy was working up there, though.
No, Nancy at that time was, I believe she was working at Tuba City.
Okay.
For as a special ed teacher, and for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
Okay.
Which would be the hardest. Anyway, that's a different story. But anyway, so I got hired anyway, and I was able to work. Me and my one of the other rangers put together, created an actual tour of the area down below the rim that people could walk, hike down to. Is like 240 stair steps.
Wow.
Down to the level of the ruins down there. And then there was kind of a, you know, signs and things that explained it. But you couldn't go down there if you couldn't walk down 240 stair steps. And so we made an accessible video and that showed that that tour that goes down and around. And we made that available to anybody who couldn't hike down there. And there were quite a few people who couldn't.
Go all the way down to where the ruins...
Yeah, the 240 stair steps.
Right.
So anyway, that was my main accomplishment there. And then since I, but I was looking for a permanent job, and I was, and the, I applied to a lot of jobs, and I know most, most people do have to apply to a lot of jobs, so this wasn't anything peculiar to being blind, but I applied to a lot of jobs and didn't get hired until finally I got hired at Herbert Hoover Historic Site in eastern Iowa. So I went there and worked there, except I wasn't getting along too well with my supervisor. My supervisor didn't really believe in all the training that I'd gotten.
He didn't believe you had the training, or?
No, he didn't believe in the philosophy behind it.
Oh.
The philosophy behind the training I'd gotten was to talk about the, you know, the actual issues of the day and to explain how the resource, in this case, the Birthplace Cottage, how it connects with Herbert Hoover's life as president, etc. But so I was studying all of this stuff about Herbert Hoover. I knew way more about Herbert Hoover than I think most people there at Herbert Hoover Historic Site. Because all the manager wanted us to do, my manager wanted me to do, was to, you know, invite people into the Birthplace Cottage and explain why the bed was shorter than a normal bed.
Oh God! So it had nothing to do with the Depression or the times or
no.
Wow.
And the pie safe, I'd explain that and show them how a wood-burning stove worked and that sort of thing. And that's all they wanted me to do. They wanted me to talk about Herbert Hoover.
That's weird.
Yeah, so that's why I didn't get along with her very well. Well, anyway, in the meantime, Nancy was trying to get a job teaching again. And the state of Iowa didn't even believe her evidence that she graduated from high school.
What?
Much less she had a master's degree in education, but they didn't believe it. So she had all this trying to prove that she, you know, she had the education she had, and the most they would ever let her do was be a substitute teacher.
That's crazy.
And so she was, you know, climbing the walls trying to get a job someplace else. And she did get a job working at the bank. Well, no, working at there's a, like a Carnegie Library there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
West Branch, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And she, the previous librarian had quit, and she used to smoke cigarettes, the other librarian, and
In the library.
Yeah, and the whole library smelled like cigarette smoke.
Oh my gosh.
And there were whole sections of books that had been taped together.
What?
Like encyclopedias, for example.
That's crazy.
They were all taped together.
Weird.
Anyway, so she was trying to fix up that. But anyway, we finally, we got back to or finally she got she applied. There was a job opening. Well, I'll make a long story short. Anyway, there's a job opening at the South Rim at the Grand Canyon School, and she got that job. Our agreement was whoever gets a job someplace else first, that's where we're going. And so she got the job first. So we moved back to Grand Canyon, and she started working as a special ed teacher at the school on the South Rim. And I didn't have a job, but because I had housing, because Nancy had teacher housing, so so I had housing, which was at the time at least really hard to get housing for the employees they needed. So they needed interpretive rangers, and even though I had worked at Herbert Hoover for enough years to be a permanent ranger, they wouldn't hire me as a permanent ranger.
And you had the Walnut Canyon experience.
Yeah, that was seasonal.
And then you had, but you still had that experience. Then
right.
You had Herbert Hoover, where you were permanent, right?
Right.
And then
right.
You come back to Grand Canyon, and they put you in a seasonal interpretive position?
Right, right.
And is this where the safety officer comes in?
No. That the safety officer comes in this way. So I was a seasonal ranger, interpretive ranger, on the South Rim. And remember, I had lived at the Grand Canyon for
years.
By this point, 20 years.
Right.
And knew it like the back of my hand, and knew a lot. You know, I'd been checking out geology and natural history and all the things that you need to know as an interpretive ranger. And so, you know, I went ahead and went through. They made, of course, all those interpretive rangers had to take, had to get all this training, because, of course, we don't know anything. But I did, but, you know, so, but they didn't really recognize that.
The fact that you've been there for 20 years already.
Right, right. And then in the summertime, they have a room. There's a special room down at Phantom Ranch, or is it the ranch actually in the Pink House? It's called the, there's a ranger station down there that they painted pink. They painted it pink because they did some experiments somehow, and they discovered that a pink building is harder to see in the bottom of the canyon than any other color building.
To try to kind of make it disappear.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they called it the Pink House.
Okay.
Anyway, they had that, and also there was the trail crew bunkhouse, which had, which I could stay in too, but anyway, I was at the Pink House, the Pink House was open. Well, I wanted, you know, having lived down at Phantom Ranch for 10 years, I felt like I, you know, kind of knew the territory down there, and wanted to be the Phantom Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Every summer, they hire one of the seasonals as the Phantom Ranger, and that person, they hire two seasonals as Phantom Rangers, and they alternate down at the bottom of the canyon.
Through the whole winter?
No, through the whole summer.
Oh, through the whole summer. Okay.
Through the whole summer.
And they hire these guys, the people who are seasonals up on the top?
Yeah.
Okay.
To be
down
Phantom
there.
Rangers.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, you could volunteer to be a Phantom Ranger, and they decided who to be the Phantom Rangers. So anyway, they hired two people to do that, and I applied, but they didn't pick me. And that happened every year except for 1 year. And the
so can you remember those years?
Yeah, it was, would be 80,
late
80s. No, 90, 92, I believe was the first year, 92,
okay.
93, 94, 95, all the way up to 2000. In 2000, they actually did hire me to be a Phantom Ranger.
But you applied every year?
I applied every year.
And they knew that you had lived down there?
Yes.
Wow.
And I'm going, what is going on? Why can't? And then also, they had these a program. Part of their program was a early morning hike down the Kaibab Trail down to Cedar Ridge. It was advertised in the guide and all that stuff. And they'd all meet. We'd all meet up at the flag, up at the very beginning of the Kaibab Trail, and then, go down from there. It was a 2 to 3 hour hike, I guess it would be,
mm-hmm.
down, and then you release everybody at Cedar Ridge, and then they'd hike out on their own.
Okay.
That was what I was supposed to do, and I volunteered for that over and over again and I got it occasionally, but not on a normal basis.
And how many times do you think you'd hike down the Kaibab Trail?
Hundreds of times.
And they knew that?
They knew that. And yet, they basically did everything they could to keep me from going over the rim into the canyon. And I eventually found out that what was going on was that the safety officer of the Park Service on the South Rim, who's just this guy that hangs out in his office as far as I could tell,
mm-hmm.
saw this, there's a blind guy hiking into the canyon. We can't have that. What if he falls, or what if, what if something happens to him? Then we'll be, he could sue us for something or other, or whatever. I don't know what his whole philosophy was, but his name was Don Singer, and he would go to my supervisors, such as Chuck Waller and others, and tell them that it was dangerous to let me do Cedar Ridge hikes.
Had you ever, you must have met this guy one-on-one at some point.
Yes, I had met him.
And he just took one look at you and decided that was it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he
well, not one look, but yeah, he yeah. was doing it all those years.
Yeah, many, many years. He had decided yeah. in his mind that he didn't think you were capable of doing it, even though you had done it hundreds of times.
Well, he didn't think it was safe. He
yeah.
thought it was capable.
Yeah.
He didn't think it was safe for me to do it.
Okay.
And so I couldn't do it. I was being obviously discriminated against because of my vision.
Did they
even
have any...
I had plenty of proof that
You could do it.
I could do it.
Did they have at that point in the early 90s and into the 90s, was there a human resource thing that dealt with discrimination or no?
Yes, yes. There is, Eve Watson was the, what was her job? I'm not sure. I think she was the
personnel or
she was in, I think she was in the person. I don't know. She was her office wasn't in personnel. Oh geez, yes, it was in personnel. So yeah, it must have been a personnel job. But she, you know, so I went to her and I said, you know, this doesn't seem fair, and anyway, let me go on with the story.
Okay, so go on.
Eventually, I'm pretty sure it was in 2000, I actually got a permanent position at Phantom Ranch, or not permanent, but I actually got to be the Phantom Ranch Ranger.
Okay.
And, but the only way I could do it was I had to ride down on a mule, one of the mules, one of the trail crew, not trail crew, one of the...
Like Wranglers?
One of the trail crew mules,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Or actually it was the Packers, the government Packer mules.
Okay.
They had a mule that was... Well, it was a huge mule. I can't remember what its name was, but Sam or something like that. And it was a big old guy, and but anyway, I had to be at the trailhead on, I think it was on Tuesdays, and Tuesday morning, early. I mean, before dawn. And the Packer, it was Mike Tomici was the Packer, and he'd put a saddle on this mule, and then I'd ride usually in the back of the group, but sometimes right behind Mike, but usually he had to, you know, because the pack mules are the crazy ones.
Mm-hmm.
You never can.
You don't know if they're going to go crazy or...
Right. So anyway, I rode right down on a Tuesday with him. And then the next Tuesday, I ride out with him. And then I was... officially still working on Wednesday, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I guess it was. Anyway, I was officially working, but I had to find things to do on the South Rim. Whereas people with good vision, of course, that were Phantom Rangers, could hike down the trail. They didn't have to use a mule. And I admit that it was really nice to be able to take a mule in and out of the canyon all the time, but it wasn't necessary, and and that was grinding on my nerves anyway. You know, why am I, you know, because, you know, as an interpretive ranger, that first day and that last day, you're supposed to be on the trail. You're supposed to be helping people that are hiking,
right,
or be there in case of an emergency, which there always was. You know, weird things happening on the trail all the time, and I couldn't do that because I was up on a mule. I was just riding in and out. So.
And this was all the decision of that safety guy.
You know what? I discovered that it was not the decision of his decision. It was the decision of the superintendent at the time.
Ooh.
Whose name I can't remember, but he was this black guy.
Okay.
That's all I know.
Okay, black guy in the early 2000s or end of the 2000s?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And he had decided that yes, I could, you know, I could go down, but I could go down with a mule, but I could go down there, but I had to ride a mule.
Okay.
Because that was the only way that that I could do it safely, according to him.
I'm going to take a quick look on your phone to see if I can find his name. Superintendent Grand Canyon. And you think like 2000, 2005, something like that?
2000, yeah. In the
2000s.
Maybe 2000, 2001. I'm trying to remember. I think I was able to do that maybe 2 years. I don't know. No, just 1 year. And then the second time. Well, anyway.
Was his name Alston?
No.
Joe Alston went out in 2007. Okay, let me just...
No, he was a nice guy, Joe Alston.
I'll just put in Black Superintendent at Grand Canyon. Because there's probably only been one, right? That I know of.
Yeah, that I know of, yeah.
Ben Roberts, Brenda Todd, Charles Young. Charles Young became a leading... Oh, that was after the Civil War. Ohio. We're back to Charles Young again. Ben Roberts selected, that was later, Rudd, Connie Rudd.
That was a guy.
It's a guy.
It would be either just before or just after.
Not Ed Keeble, right? Ed.
No. It was just before or just after. Oh, shoot. There's a name again. Just after... gosh darn. Who's that comedian that plays the banjo?
What's his name? Martin. Steve Martin.
Steve Martin. Yeah. Steve Martin was either just before him or just after him.
Okay, let's ask
that. I think question. It was just before him, Steve Martin.
See if I can go back up to now I'm in the Grand Canyon Conservancy. Dang, your phone is weird.
I know it.
Well, we'll find him. I'll look him up and I'm hoping that Tom, who's gonna get this, Martin.
Uh-huh.
We'll have a clue who the guy's name is.
Yeah.
What the guy's name is. Okay, so this guy, was he the superintendent very long?
No, not very long at all. But
you somehow found out it was him.
It was him, yeah. And I had to file a grievance through Eve Watson. She helped me file a grievance. And they actually accepted the grievance in Washington. You know, you make a grievance and it goes to a committee in Washington, D.C. And in Washington, D.C., they decide whether there's merit behind your complaint
or
not. And then if there is merit, then they schedule a hearing.
Okay.
And they did that. They said, yes, there... You have a grievance of discrimination because they're making me ride a mule all the time, and there's reason for this complaint. Well, when that happened, the superintendent said, "Okay, you can walk down it if you want to."
So it took that.
Yeah.
So it really does pay to fight back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he didn't want to go through the the whole thing process. Of a grievance against him.
So how many years were you doing the walking up and down then?
Just one, because...
At this point, it's almost the end of your career?
No.
Okay.
Because Don Singer was still there, you know, still keeping me out of the canyon as much as possible.
The safety guy?
Yeah.
So even though the superintendent of the park said, fine, walk down, you still had this pain in the butt, Don Singer.
Right.
So what'd you do about him, or could you do anything?
I couldn't do anything about him.
Because his job was safety.
Yeah, it was all, and he's, you know, the stuff he's doing is all kind of under the rug, because he's, you know, going to my supervisors and saying, you know, that you shouldn't let Keith Green go down in the canyon, because it's dangerous, and we could get sued, and blah, blah, blah. And I have to admit that I am only guessing this is what was going on, because I just couldn't, you know, I'd confront my managers and say, listen, I can do good at down at Phantom Ranch. I'm a really good, you know, I need to do, to interpret down there. It's my calling, you know, I mean,
right.
I need to do this. And they'd say, yeah, well, okay, I'll try to schedule you in there if I can.
And then the schedule
would come out and I wouldn't be in it.
Oh, that would just be so frustrating.
It was frustrating. I guess it all ended in 2009 when I resigned. I resigned because Nancy had resigned her job at school, and I resigned. Before I resigned, I think it was Chuck said, oh, we'll have a party for you, a going away party. How about, and Stu Fritz was retiring at the same time. How about we have a party for you and Stu Fritz retiring? And Stu Fritz is kind of he'd been an interpretive ranger for years and years and years, and he was pretty well known. I mean, he'd been in public, in the news and stuff like that. So he was a well-known, anyway, ranger, but he was, Stu was really, eccentric.
Okay.
That would be the word. He was really eccentric, and he would always wear, instead of the flat hat that the rest of us wore, he had this kind of a cowboy hat that was all you know, wrinkled up and stuff that he would always wear, and you know, and sometimes he'd be at work and he'd be wearing just a long sleeve shirt. It wouldn't be a ranger shirt.
Man, and he got away with all that.
Yeah, well, sort of. You know, they kept, you know, telling him, now you got to, you know, but he was a famous guy.
Right, so that's hard. It was hard for them to possibly really discipline him.
Right.
Because everybody knew who he was.
Right. And so, you know, he was old enough to retire, but he just didn't want to, you know, he
right.
was having too much fun. And,
right.
And so
must have been so frustrating
for
you.
What they did is they forced him to retire.
God.
I can't remember exactly how it went, but they basically told him, okay, you need to retire because you're not following the rules, and you know, either follow the rules or retire. And so, you know, he had to retire, and they were gonna, so they were gonna you know, do my retirement party at the same time as him, which would, you know, I'd just be a little figure over in the corner compared to him.
Even though you had been there for, at that point, 30 years?
Yeah, yeah. But not working for the Park Service and not working permanent. I didn't get on permanent until, you know, that I had to work as a seasonal.
But still, it was your whole career, though.
Right, right. And so I just said, well, you know, you're making Stu retire, you know, which is a bunch of bull in the first place. And, you know, like, and so they're going to all act like, oh, he's the best ranger and we just really love him, you know, and they're, it's just two-faced,
yeah,
you know.
That exactly.
They're just, they're sending him out to pasture, basically.
Yeah.
And so I refused to have anything to do with it. I said, no, I don't want a retirement party. I'll do my own retirement party. And that's what I did. I arranged to have at the Thunderbird Lodge. Mm-hmm. There's a place in the middle. You know, there's rooms on either end, mm-hmm. you know, but right in the middle there's a kind of a little conference, well, not really
place for people
room.
To gather.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
It's got nice windows looking mm-hmm. out at the canyon and stuff like that. And so I arranged to have that, and I got the El Tovar to, well, Nancy, of course, was helping me, but we arranged to get the El Tovar to do hors d'oeuvres, and you know, we had a party, you know, an invited party. I didn't invite most of the Park Service, but I invited, you know, all the friends that I had up
right.
there. Well, we both did, so that was our retirement party.
Yeah, I wonder how many people end up leaving Grand Canyon after having a career there not very happy with, you know, ultimately how they feel, you know, they were treated, you know?
Oh, I'm sure there's lots of people that do.
It's kind of a shame because it's, you know, it's a big, I mean, maybe that's part of the problem. It's a big government thing with their rules and regulations, and they don't know how to bend at all, you know?
Right, right.
What a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, but, you know, I always said, you know, when I, ever since then, when people said, hey, what did you do? Oh, it's a ranger on the south. Oh, I said, that must have been fun. I said, it was. The only thing is I had to work with the Park Service.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And to, you know, now with all of their anti-discrimination stuff, I mean, they've almost gone like the other way, you know, like they really, they have, cannot discriminate against because they will be sued. I mean, I don't know if that safety officer would be able to, if you could just simply say, no, it's too dangerous. If someone has shown that they can go up and down 100 times, anybody could fall off the edge, whether they're blind or not, if they're not paying attention.
Right.
Right?
Right, that's true.
So, yeah, that must have been very frustrating for you.
It was. It was incredibly frustrating. Because, you know, I couldn't do what I wanted to do, you know, which was to go down to Phantom Ranch and...
And talk about everything you knew about Phantom Ranch.
Yeah, right.
And you were a fountain of information and they didn't even know it.
Yeah, when I was down there, you know, I mean, the people, the rangers who were assigned the Phantom Ranch job, you know, every once in a while they'd have to go off for some reason, you know, go to Hawaii or something, you know, for a family vacation or something like that, you know. And so they call on me to, because actually nobody else wanted to go down there. And they call on me to be the you know, to temporarily be the ranger. So I do like 1-2 week stint or, you know, that's sort of thing. But anyway, one of my favorite things to do, which it seemed like it really, you know, got a big reception with tourists, was on in the mornings would be I'd meet everybody. I'd advertise, you know, there's signboards around that I could advertise a ranger walk, which wasn't on my, you know, which I didn't have to do, but I just did it because it was fun. A ranger walk out to down to Phantom Creek, which is about a mile up creek from Phantom Ranch, and back, and so we'd meet there, and you know, I could tell them, you know, when we got, you know, first, you know, there's the pipeline, you know, the runs the irrigation ditches, which is really obvious, you know, then pulls water out of the creek, blah blah blah, and then just below that, there's a place where you can look across. You're in Bright Angel Canyon there, and you look across the canyon, and there's all these big holes in the wall that were dug by miners, and that whole story. And then we'd go a little further, you know, and there was the Clear Creek Trail, and I'd tell them all about, you know, what's down the Clear Creek Trail, and especially there, that's where they found the stick figurines.
That's so cool.
And stuff like that, yeah. So all the way down to the beginning of Phantom Creek, and then I did it there. But
did you ever have any of the people who were staying there ask you about the fact that you were legally blind? Did they know? Did anybody ever say anything?
No, I try to keep that secret.
Yeah, so they would not.
Yeah, I mean,
you wear your glasses, and
if there was a time when something was going on that it was real obvious that I couldn't see what they were talking about, then I'd have to tell them that, you know, I'm sorry, I can't see it because my vision's not very good. But that didn't happen very often.
So you knew from living down there as long as you did, and your vision probably changed over the years.
Right.
So you saw a lot, you were able to see a lot more in the beginning?
No, it really didn't start changing radically until the last few years, just, you know, since I left the canyon.
But you mean you could see well enough to do these sort of monumental hikes,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my vision was pretty stable, really, until then. I mean, stable, it was still, you know, it was still pretty bad, you know, I couldn't, you know, whereas people might say, oh, you know, look at that.
Look at that bird up there or something.
Bird up there, or look at that rock over there on the other side. I would be talking about the formations, mm-hmm. you know the red wall and the Coconino sandstone and all those, you know, I'd be talking about all that stuff, you know, and in more general terms, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But giving them, you know, natural history of the Grand Canyon.
Sure.
Which is what people, I think, you know, you don't get enough of that if you go down by yourself and you haven't done a lot of prep work and you don't really know sort of the gross overall picture of everything, you know, how old the rock is and what formed everything and how the river carved all this. I mean, that, as a person who is just down there as a tourist, that's what you want to know,
yeah,
you know?
Well, that's the kind of stuff I was talking about, not, you know, see that rabbit running across the...
Right, and if you see a bird, well, I mean, if you're interested in birds, people who are birders usually have their binoculars and their bird books with them anyways.
Well, I'd ask them. So they go, oh, look, is that a raven or is that a condor? And I'd have to ask them questions like, well, does it have, you know, white on the wings or... You know, is it got this sort of thing, you know, to find out. And I could tell them what kind of bird it was.
Right, because you'd studied it.
Right.
Wow. I mean, do you ever think back, you know, like you saw that job ad for seasonal help at the Grand Canyon back after you had gotten your master's degree and you said it was kind of difficult to find a job at that time.
Yes.
And do you ever think, like, wow, how your whole life was owed to that job ad?
Yeah.
You know?
That's true, yeah.
How one little thing can just, you know, change everything about your whole life, where you live, who you marry.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty interesting.
I know, because... That's kind of, you know, that's one of the amazing things about life is, and that's what makes college so silly in a lot of ways, because you don't know, when you're in college, you have no idea what your life is going to need, you know, what kind of knowledge you need to have. I mean, the nice thing about college is it taught me how to study.
Mm-hmm.
It taught me how to, you know, to find out answers to questions, and you know that's what I'd use, and it taught, you know, there were history classes, you know, the history and was really helpful for me because that became kind of my emphasis was on the human history of the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And but you know, it taught me how to study and how to interpret, you know, the things, and it taught me a lot about the scientific method, which is really important,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to reading stuff, because there's, you know, there's the individual sightings of something, say, as versus an actual study that could actually tell you, you know, somebody could say, well, I saw this, mostly in terms of humanity. I knew this guy, and because such and such happened, he became a such and such.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he became a criminal, and so they had to outlaw that such and such from happening to anybody.
It's, yeah, kind of generalizing and, it.
Yeah, but that's just a one person. That's not an experiment.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, but I don't think I would know that if I hadn't, you know, studied scientific method in college.
Right. And I think, you know, having studied psychology probably made you a good interpretive ranger.
I'm sure it helped. Yeah, it did.
You know, because sure. Just...
Well, it taught me more like what an experiment is. You know, you can't. There's so much stuff that's anecdotal, that's the word I was trying to think of. There's so much stuff that's just anecdotal evidence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, I saw blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah.
So happened. Then you make this big generalization.
So you think every time you see blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. No.
No.
How does it work?
No.
That way.
Well, is there anything else in terms of this oral history interview that you think we didn't cover?
Well, we haven't talked about the swimming pool. And, or the flood.
The swimming pool was, I think you had told me that the swimming pool was already gone when you got down there, right?
That's right. And, well, there was a hole in the ground.
Yeah, there was a hole and they had been throwing trash into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the flood, I think we covered a flood, but I don't know if it was the flood, if it was a flood when you were there or not.
No, this was the one in 68.
Okay.
There was another flood. Well, it was actually after I'd left there, but...
But in terms of your history in the Grand Canyon, we covered it pretty well, right? Your time in the Grand Canyon. Is there anything we missed? Because the other things you are covering in your book.
Yeah, that's true.
And we have made, between your typing and my typing and your reciting, it's actually coming along, which is good.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry I didn't get to talk more with Nancy, but it got more and more difficult.
Yeah, it did.
As it got closer to the end.
Yeah. Yeah, she had some good stories.
She did. It was just really hard for her to verbalize them, and she was also, it would upset her, too, to remember.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, let me just turn this off right now.
Okay.
And thank you very much for all of these interviews. I'm signing off.